Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Game Saturday, 3:30. Kickoff time here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I have you for Texans Countdown. 12:30 Texans Countdown. The big watch there and a big watch party at the Rustic. If you're a Texan fan, you're looking to watch with other Texan fans. I know there's a big watch party. The team's having a watch party at the Rustic. The team is doing the send-off tomorrow at the stadium at noon when the buses leave. So if you want to wave to the team, send them off in style, be part of that, hang out with some other Texan fans and take the rest of the day off tomorrow, I would say.
In 2019, they had a watch party at the Rustic for the Chiefs divisional round game.
Yep.
And it was fun. I was there for the first half, and it was a lot of fun. It was a really cool environment. I don't know what it was like in the environment in the second half, because I left. I watched the second half at home. And when I, because I was... I mean, hey, it's 24-0. It's just it'll be no big. Well,
at halftime, it wasn't.
Right, yeah. I think when it was 24-0, it was like, all right, I'm going to listen on the radio and get home by halftime.
Yeah,
and that was
this, this is your fault.
It was a miserable drive home.
We now know whose fault it was that they gave up the 24-0 lead. It was Seth.
I remember walking out to the parking lot, getting in my car, just figuring out this is going to be an awesome drive to my place, and then it's just going to be nothing, but no, it wasn't that
way. Can you imagine getting in your car, like it's 24-0, you get in your car, and like 24-0, and you're listening to the game, commercial comes on, you're like, I'm going to listen to a little music for a little bit, and then you can just kind of forget about the game. That happens sometimes. Even a playoff game, you probably wouldn't, but like a regular season game, you get in, you're like, oh yeah, that's right, they were winning. I forgot to flip it back over. I was enjoying this, you know, hip-hop or classic rock I was listening to, and you flip back, you're gone for 15 minutes, and you flip back over, and it's 28-24 Chiefs.
Sean, it was the exact same feeling I had when, you know, I tried to just stay away from following my investments closely. Like, a lot of times, I would just kind of reallocate once a year, and in 2008, I was like, all right, time to reallocate. Whoa! Hey, who stole all my money?
Yeah.
Dude. What the hell's going on here?
Oh, my God.
Hey.
Oh, my God. Don't talk about that ever again. Like
That was the Great Recession.
Yes.
Sean, that was the beginning of the Great Recession. The loss to the Chiefs was the beginning of the Great Texans Recession.
That's true. That's 100% true. Yes.
It just felt like, oh, my gosh. I don't even know if, like, hey, maybe David Culley can resurrect this economy.
Right. No. Well, fortunately, we've got better financial advisors now for the Texans, you know, like for that analogy. Like, now things are good. They're trending in the right direction. I feel like we're holding on to some good stocks.
There are a lot of good financial advisors that get fired during the Great Recession for
fair.
No fault of their own.
Fair.
I feel all those guys, like people who are angry that their financial advisor didn't just somehow guide them through. There's the most cletic. Yeah, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm it's a little scar tissue here.
I can tell.
My joints are popping.
So my question is, to your point, we know this version of the Texans headed to Kansas City for this game is better than the versions of the Texans that came after that last Kansas City loss. They've improved, for sure. This version going up to Kansas City versus last year's version going up to Baltimore. If you can tap into a year ago and recall how we felt. Last year was a lot of found money and gravy and like, wow, we didn't even expect to be here kind of stuff.
So right.
The vibe is different. Is the team better, though, going into Kansas City? Is this a better team?
The defense is better.
Substantially better, I would say.
In terms of especially the ability to just take the ball away and to you know make some plays that could really help in ailing offense. As far as offensively, I'd say they're on the sum total of it over the second half of the season, they've been a worse offense than they were last year.
Yes.
And they weren't actually a good offense last year. They were a promising offense.
Yeah.
That's been the really disturbing part of all of it. Do you recall what the spread was going into the Ravens game last
year? It was like 10, I think. I'll look it up.
It was pretty
and for those who don't know, this spread, when I last checked this morning, Seth, the spread was 8.5. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of settled into that 8-9. It's not going to get under a touchdown. It's not going to get over 10. It's going to hover around 8 or 9 probably all week long.
I do feel, at the very least, I think this Texans, let's start with a very low standard.
Okay.
I think this Texans team is much better equipped to not get blown out in the divisional round the way they did last year.
That's a start.
Partly because because of the team they're playing, too.
Yes.
I think Baltimore just simply has more ability to blow teams out right now if they keep playing the way they were in the regular season, as we have experienced.
Indeed.
But I think I feel less confident that the Texans offense can scrap their way into a performance, even despite last week, and it was really, really good. I credit the offensive line for doing some of the good things they did. There are a lot of good things. I don't feel confident right now that they can build their way back into it. I guess the part that bothers me the most is that after the Ravens game, we saw that clearly they needed to bolster the interior offensive line. A lot of our listeners were really upset that it wasn't aggressively addressed in the offseason. I wasn't asleep at the switch, but I thought, well, you know, they feel like they like the future of Juice Scruggs. They see something in Kenyon Green, all of that. And I definitely was way too patient with all of that because it remains an issue. So when it comes to what can the Chiefs do to the Texans offense and how can they really screw up their day, it's almost the exact same issue that it was last year versus the Ravens. We left that Ravens game, we thought, I think probably after the Ravens game last year, even though it was a really embarrassing loss, you probably felt a lot like what the Chargers feel like now, which is, all right, yeah, that sucked and all, but you know what? That we're probably ahead of schedule.
Year one,
where we thought they'd be.
New coach.
Yeah. And next year, of course, we'll be better next year. So offensively, I don't feel much different than I did going into that Ravens game.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a very similar group that's going into this game, except you've got Joe Mixon at running back instead of Devin Singletary at running back.
Right, and the same issue last year was, you only had Nico Collins out there. If only you had Tank Dell.
Yeah.
And, you know, Robert Woods is your second guy. Like, what are you going to do? That's what it was last year.
Yeah, Mechie actually had his best game as a pro, other than the Detroit game this year, his best game to that point in that Baltimore playoff game. He was actually pretty good in that game.
So, that's the difference this year is, like, okay, now Mechie is the guy where you're kind of like, oh, this is our second guy, and Robert Woods is the guy that is also there, but it's not your premier wide receiving group.
No.
It feels very, very similar to last year.
9.5.
I'm less worried about a blowout just because the Chiefs' offense doesn't present the same type of challenge as the Ravens' offense.
Yeah, I'm more confident in this team solely based on the ceiling this defense has.
Yeah,
you know, like the ceiling, like that defense last year was improved for sure. Like everything was improved over the previous year. Like you couldn't find a stat, offensive or defensive, in that Lovie Smith year that the Texans were even below average. Like they were at the bottom of the league in everything. So the defense was expectedly improved last year with D'Amico Ryans as a coach and with an influx of talent and so forth. This defense, like the ceiling for this defense is, if they play to that ceiling for the rest of the postseason, is they can win the Super Bowl. You can win the Super Bowl with this defense And with the offense playing average, just not turning the ball over, you know.
I mean, the biggest thing is last year they were the Texans were six. They had the 16th most interceptions in the league. This year they were second in interceptions.
Yeah,
the Vikings really pulled away at the end. They had because the Texans and the Vikings were kind of right up there at 1 and 2 for a while. The Vikings ended up with 24 interceptions. The Texans with 19.
Well, I guess the big difference would be then, because so they were middle of the pack in interceptions last year. They're near the top of the pack, but last year they were at or near the top in turnover margin. And I think that's the difference this year, is that they're intercepting all these passes. You know, they're forcing all these turnovers. But they ain't near the top of the league in turnover margin anymore, because CJ's thrown 12 interceptions this year. 13 now with the playoff interception there, you know? So he's got to protect the football. By the way, 9.5 was the spread last year going into Baltimore. So it's a similar it would be a similar upset, you know, in terms of just the overall.
If they pulled it off.
Yeah.
I think the gamblers, and hence Sean T. Pendergast, really like the yards per play.
Yes.
Last year, the Texans' defense was 15th in yards per play. Mm-hmm. They allowed 5.2 yards per play.
Yeah.
This year, I believe they were in the top three of yards per play.
Okay.
It's just like that. Just on it meets the eyeball test on a down by down basis. They were fourth in yards
per play. Well, and that they're fourth in yards per play, and they give up the most chunk play, most chunk. Like, if they could eliminate the chunk plays, we are talking about a I won't say historic, because you got to win big games. You got to get further than the divisional round. But they're bringing a lot of these guys back next year and the year after that, man. Like, their nucleus is pretty built with this thing right now, and the head coach ain't going anywhere. And that's the biggest thing out of all this, you know? So, wow, that surprises me that they're that good in yards per play, just given all the chunk plays that they give up.
Well, but it's the chunk plays, like, you know, I just kind of casually throw out there. They're really, really good 95% of the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what the actual number or percentage would be. They're very, very good on a down-in, down-out basis.
No doubt.
It's just these huge chunk plays that they allow, these glitches, which isn't, you know, a complete fluke. Some of the being good on the 95% of the plays is because you're playing aggressively in certain situations.
Yeah.
It's when
it's correlated.
That aggressiveness does you in. And I'm not even talking about blitzing or anything, but just on an individual level.
Yeah.
Sometimes those, you know, if Kamari Lassiter as a rookie cornerback bites on a double move, hey, it works out a lot of the times when he's aggressive like that. But when he gets burned by a double move, it's not so hot.
Right. Yeah, like how you're wired is never perfect, you know. And that's one of the glitches in how they're wired. So will this be the last year? And maybe I'm just injecting my opinion into this. I personally feel, Seth, that if they go up to Kansas City, and unless they somehow blow it, unless they have a 24-0 lead and lose 30-27, to me, if this is a close game, if they go up there and they're trading blows with Kansas City and it comes down to the end of the fourth quarter, you know, team that has the ball last wins, and it just so happens that it's Mahomes that has the ball last, and that's how the season ends, I view this as a successful season overall. Like, you won the division again. You won 10 games. You blew out. As an underdog, you blew out a wild card opponent at home again, and you went up to Kansas City and you almost killed the king. I'm curious what other people think, because I know there's going to be people that are like, no, the expectation was to get further than this. It's just with all the injuries, I feel like the expectations changed somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, and that's where it gets dicey when you start talking about, was it a failure of a season? Was it successful? There's you could come up with 2,900 different definitions for what success is.
Yeah.
So you're going to have succeeded in some areas. You're going to have failed in other areas. I think for me, it won't have been successful in that you did not see any progression or development, at least statistically, out of your quarterback.
Yeah.
And that the offense, in a lot of ways, feels like it took a step back. You're stagnant at the offensive line. You're stagnant at the quarterback position. Yes, the injuries matter. And I would excuse it because of injuries more easily if they had ever looked like a genuinely good offense when they had their receivers, even just two of them. You know, hey, Nico Collins and Tank Dell in their second year, if they're both healthy, or Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs on the field together.
Mm-hmm.
You don't, even without all three of them, you added Joe Mixon as a running back, and there was no part of Joe Mixon that looked like, oh, you know, he's physically starting to degrade or something.
Yeah.
It just was not, given the talent level on the offense, they took a step backwards, and that's bad.
Yeah.
It was a failure offensively, unless they continue this momentum from the last week's game. If something genuinely clicked,
right,
then that might change everything.
Right. Obviously, there's still games to be played here. They've still got time for it to click.
Yeah, so I'll give the offense, if they were to end, even with a competitive game against the Chiefs, but the offense doesn't really produce, yeah, they would end up, as, if we're just doing pass-fail, it was a fail for the offense this season.
Yeah, and I guess maybe this is a separate question. You know, whether it's a success or failure, that's just report card stuff. It's really comes down more to two things. How do you feel going into next season? Like, what's your hope level? I'm talking from a fan perspective. Like, how do you feel about the direction of this team, the direction of the quarterback, the direction of the head coach, but really of the overall franchise? And number two, what's your confidence level in Nick Caserio and DeMeco Ryans to fix the things that you're talking about, right?
Right.
What are their resources to do it, and what are their capabilities of doing it?
I think then where you get into is, are you stuck in kind of a purgatory of the first few years of Gary Kubiak, where you're making progress offensively, and yet by 2010... what are you going to do about this defense? Like, you just, it's not, why? And at least at that point, they had, you know, dabbled and made a couple of changes as a defensive coordinator, but it would feel like we're just stuck here. Like, what are we really going to accomplish unless we figure out how to do things on defense back then? And now it's the opposite problem, which would be, all right, you're going to keep rolling with Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's going to be different? What's going to change? How is next year going to be different? There will be a lot of malaise. And I think right now, if I had to handicap it, feels like about 78% chance that Bobby's still the offensive coordinator.
It's the favorite for sure, I think.
Yeah, so there's going to be a whole lot of hand-wringing all offseason long if that's the case. And it's funny because I think very few people, other than people who are going to be trolling for comments on the internet, I don't think anybody has lost faith in DeMeco Ryans.
Mm-mm.
But it would be like, okay, well, what are you doing about the offense?
Mm-hmm.
Because you did some things last year to fix the offense, and it ended up being worse. So what are we really doing here?
Yeah. So far, the early return on the text page, people are not grading as kindly, hypothetically grading kindly as I am right now. Losing this weekend would be par for the course. Well, that's actually literally true. I mean, they're 0-5 in the divisional round. Like, that's not even shade. Like, they have yet to win one of these games. I think they can do it.
This team is like back in the heyday of as the Astros were starting to turn it around, where they had all these quadruple A players, guys that would get called, John Singleton, guys would just be destroying triple A.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd get up to the majors and fall apart. And you're like, what the hell is going on here? That's it. That's the Texans between the wild card and the divisional rounds.
That's where they are.
They destroy the wild card
round.
They do not. They take no prisoners.
Yes. Take that.
Then they get up to the majors in the divisional round. They're like, dang it.
Hopefully not this weekend.
So this needs to be the Carlos Correa year.
This does.
Where one of your guys who's been destroying the minors actually comes up and really shows out.
Yes. All right.
I guess Springer would be the first, yeah.
Which teams in the NFL right now are going to be in the QB market this offseason? How glad are we that we are not one of these? I've got 7 teams, I think, that are going to be in that market. So we'll go through these, take a look outside of Houston for a little bit. We'll do that coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Oh, Seth and I are just doing a little fancy geometry during the break. In case anybody's wondering what happens during the breaks on this show, Seth and I were just talking trapezoids and rhombuses, rhombi. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a really scintillating conversation.
Talking about how little we actually remember of geometry.
Mm-hmm.
Just Euclidean geometry.
Yeah.
Any other type
sure.
of geometry. Is there another geometry other than Euclidean?
Know.
I don't know.
I'm not comfortable with this. All right. So which teams are in the QB market? We can say all we want about the Texans' uneven season offensively, and CJ's numbers weren't as good as last year, and he was not as great in terms of decision-making this year as he was last year, at least in terms of interceptions. You know, he had some throws last year that he got lucky with. Who knows? Maybe he had the same number of turnover-worthy throws this year, and teams just caught him instead of dropping him a year ago. But I think to the point we were discussing in the previous segment, like, it hasn't been great offensively this year. But I think we can all agree, right, that it's nice to be off the hamster wheel that is, like, who's our quarterback going to be this year?
Yeah, no, and I don't think that, I like to do, especially with quarterbacks, fact check myself and check my bias and everything. You go around the league and you find people that are smart people who are film watchers and everything. And I've yet to find anybody who has long-term doubts about CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
I think guys like the Greg Cassells of the world and whomever else just say that there's a lot about his game this year where, A, you have to account for the fact that he's under a whole lot of pressure because of inadequate pass protection, and that, B, it looks like it's affected him and that there's parts of his game where he just – maybe when he's a veteran, he would be able to handle it better. But there's shifting sands when it comes to trying to figure out exactly, like, all right, well, should he just be handling it better and not make this throw, but make that throw? Just everything's a little bit off. The
yes.
clock in his head has been disrupted in a lot of games because of the poor pass protection. But he's still, I guess, on the other side of it, he's still making a lot of really impressive throws that are coming where, like, he is doing a really good job mentally and diagnosing things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the timing isn't always there. Nobody's felt like, oh, it was all an illusion last year and it's not going to happen again. I haven't found anybody yet, like any serious person yet outside of Houston that feels that way.
There, I count seven teams that are on that hamster wheel right now that I think definitively are. Maybe not definitive. Who knows? Maybe the Saints run it back with Derek Carr for another year. Maybe the Jets bring back Aaron Rodgers for another year. Maybe the Steelers saw something in Justin Fields or Russell Wilson that lead them to go, all right, well, this is better than Sam Darnold, you know, like that kind of thing. Cleveland, who knows what they do? We know Deshaun probably won't be back next year. These are all teams that have some veteran guys that they've been trying to do it with. And then you've got Las Vegas, who just has nobody. Like, they've been trotting Aiden O'Connell out there. The Giants.
And just to be clear, when you say Deshaun Watson probably won't be back next year, just unlikely that he comes back from that second Achilles.
Second Achilles,
tear.
That's right.
And he might be on the roster, but he's just probably not going to be their starting quarterback.
Oh, yeah, he'll for sure be on the roster. Nobody's picking up that contract, yeah.
Well, other than that, they have that weird insurance policy situation where if you know, depending on what happens with his Achilles, they might be able to recapture a bunch of that salary cap stuff. So who knows?
Yeah, they will. But he would need to be on the roster. And then they're still 26 and 27. Like, it's bad. Tennessee, Vegas, and the Giants, I think they're on the list also. Like, those are teams that just don't have a solution at quarterback right now.
You know what, man? In Tennessee, if you think about the missed opportunity there, is that they decided to really just see what they had in Will Levis. Even though, and Will Levis had some impressive performances last year, but man, I just, from having watched him in person and even in some of his good performances, there was something missing with him that I was not impressed with Will Levis. I know a lot of other people were, but I just wasn't. But in a year where there were some very promising young quarterbacks, the Titans decided to draft an offensive lineman ahead of guys like Bo Nix. And this year, I don't think there's as many promising quarterbacks.
No.
You know, you never know. They passed up an opportunity to get a guy that is a lot more promising than Will Levis to now end up in a year where they know for sure they don't like Will Levis, and they're probably not going to have a crack at a guy they feel awesome about.
No, and they have the first overall pick in the draft. Like, they got Texaned, you know? Like, the Texans getting the first pick. The three times the Texans have had the first pick, they took David Carr, which was that's an expansion team doing a foundational thing. And then it's 06 where they took Mario Williams, in 2014 where the best quarterback was Blake Bortles, you know? And so that's, if you're Tennessee, I don't know, do you feel like, Seth, they almost have to draft either Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward just to inject some hope there? Or
I guess, like, in an ideal world, they'd trade back and still draft one of those guys. But in a year when there's not a lot of good, and I shouldn't say, because either of those guys might work out. You know how it is. It's 100% total crapshoot.
Totally.
I think because it's hard to trade back from that number one overall pick when there's not a slam dunk quarterback at the top, they probably draft one of those two guys.
Yeah.
And you kind of got to do what the Colts are doing with Anthony Richardson, which is, I don't really believe that the Colts ever felt awesome about Anthony Richardson, but you gotta keep taking swings at the plate if you're gonna land a guy eventually. And so you take a swing at one of those two quarterbacks and just hope that it works out.
Do you think Indianapolis should be on this list, or they seem to be content to run it back another year with Anthony Richardson?
I think they're on that list. I don't think they feel great about Anthony.
Okay,
Richardson.
You think if they saw a quarterback in day one or two that they like, they would take him?
If there's one position in sports where I don't like the notion of, well, this guy just needs time to mature, it's quarterback.
To mature.
Like
literally, like how we define mature out in society, not mature as a quarterback.
I think most of the guys, like almost all of the guys that end up being good quarterbacks, are those kinds of guys who are freakishly mature for their age.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite of what Anthony Richardson is.
No doubt. Getting a lot of people weighing in on the success or failure. Will this season, if the Texans go up to Kansas City and they get into a last team has the ball, wins the game, dogfight.
A very, very competitive loss.
Yes,
If they lose, but it's not a blowout loss, is that a step forward?
Forward in text message. Failure. Green Bay won the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers because Mike McCarthy had the starters and the depth well coached, so that in the playoffs, all of their many, many injuries didn't matter. Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that the Texans have that luxury right now with the day. You know what
I mean? Well, yeah, I guess I want to say that feels to me, unless I'm not hearing it right, a little bit like an apples and oranges comparison, because I think part of that is also that was a fuller, deeper roster.
Correct.
Too.
Yeah.
Like, they were able to do all of that because it was a way. And most of their injuries, I guess the part of it too is the injuries were on defense that year.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as much about the offense making do with a bunch of injuries. It was unless I'm misremembering it, but it was the defense had like six starters on injured reserve at that point.
They had 25 guys on injured reserve. I remember that.
So it was probably both sides of that. Yeah.
Wait,
they had what?
25 guys on injured reserve.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on injured reserve.
I thought you said 25 starters on injured reserve.
No, that would like, that'd be
right,
something
son.
I would say hungover. I would
have remembered that.
Yeah. Seeing as there's only 22 in a game. Text message, we're as healthy as we've been in the last few seasons. If we don't win Saturday, we've hit our ceiling as currently constructed. Are we as, are
okay,
we as healthy?
That's interesting.
Are we as healthy as we've been the last few seasons, do you think?
I don't know. Are we really including 2021 and 2022?
Okay, maybe it, like the last few playoff seasons. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. Depending on... they're not inordinately banged up. They were, right. For most of the season, they were about average. So it wasn't injuries. I really don't look at it. I do not look at injuries as the excuse for stagnancy on offense.
No.
Because they still, on paper, are better this year than last year, mm-hmm. including with the injuries at wide receiver.
Yep.
The running back alone makes a big difference in all of that. So, I think offensively it'll be a failure of a season because they regressed in a lot of ways. And because your quarterback, no matter how you want to parcel out the blame in the situation on CJ himself, on the offensive line or anything, CJ didn't take a step forward, really. That's the part that makes it feel like a failure. But it's really hard for me to ignore the fact that the defense is substantially better. And, like, you could totally win a Super Bowl with this defense as long as you had competent play on the
offensive
side of the
ball. That's it, just competent. Jets, Lions, Titans, and Packers are games that should have been wins. This puts us in a whole different position. So unless it's a win this week, it's a chips-all-in loss of a season. That's an interesting notion in that, okay, that ultimately... I kind of talked this through on my podcast yesterday, Seth, in the mailbag, because we were talking about, like, okay, if the Texans are going to get past this glass ceiling of the divisional round, what's it going to look like? It will probably include being a much better regular season team. You know, if the Texans are going to get past the divisional round, the chances are that they've got to be the one or the two seed and guarantee themselves a home game in the divisional round like Buffalo is getting this year.
And I would include in that some of the disappointing performances by the defense. That the loss to the Jets and the loss to the Titans included the defense underperforming and not playing up to their standards. So that's very valid. So I guess the biggest thing right here is when you get into a conversation like this, you got to ask, okay, what are your criteria for success or failure?
Yeah.
So if your question is, if it's as simple as, okay, if you didn't win a divisional game, it's a failure, then okay, yeah, it was a failure. That's simple enough. If your criterion is, did they improve as a football team regardless of the outcome of the divisional game, it's hard for me to say that they improved overall as a football team because, for one, all right, the people before the season were saying, well, look, last year the Texans won a bunch of one-score games, and that's a little bit of luck, a little bit of flukishness. Yep, this year they lost a bunch of one-score games.
Yeah.
Then I would say, yeah, it was a failure of a season.
Yeah.
If it's, okay, do you feel... did they actually compete in the divisional round? Okay, if they... like, so there's it's just really I hate it when they make it binary and things like this, pass fail.
Yeah,
like, what is a success for a season? If you want to be super hardcore about it, if you don't win the Super Bowl, is a failure of a season.
Yeah, there's no dictionary definition for this. It's an opinion, and to me it comes down to, how do I feel about the trajectory of the organization as a whole?
Okay.
And I feel like if they go to Kansas City and I know it's just 60 minutes of football, like, they could just have a bad day and theoretically the trajectory could still be going up. You know, they've got all their draft picks next year. They've got another year to fix, you know, fix whatever they want to fix within the coaching staff and the O-line. It would take a lot for me. It would take a lot of bad on Saturday for me to feel like this team is now going downward as an organization.
Let's look,
especially
at
considering
point.
The division that they're playing in, you know?
I'll take another societal institution that people sometimes talk about as either successes or failures. Like, what makes a successful marriage? Is it simply staying together until you die, or until one of you dies, usually? As my father once said in my sister's speech...
at my
sister's wedding, which is like, you know, and you guys, and you found somebody you love that you guys will love for the rest of your lives, or at least till one of you dies. So, all right, a successful marriage versus a successful football team. It's hard to have a successful football or a successful marriage if maybe you stay together, but one of you is cheating on the other like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the right.
Not just one time when you're a drunk on a work trip, but like all the time.
All the time, yeah.
Hard to have to call that a successful marriage. Are the Texans the equivalent of a team right now that, okay, if they play a competitive divisional game, but they're basically Bobby Sloak is out gallivanting about town,
yeah,
talking to the Jets today as he is.
Right. All right, Payne and Pendergast. We don't get to do this very often, but the Rockets are good again. Would you do this trade that ESPN.com is proposing for the Houston Rockets? It would bring somebody here that is very polarizing among Rocket fans and NBA fans, but would you do it? We'll discuss that coming up next.
From the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. So, would you do this deal? ESPN.com.
Yes.
Hold tight. Hang on. ESPN.com has five offers that would change the title race is the, and this is talking about the NBA, not the, obviously you can't make an NFL trade. NBA trade deadline coming up in a few weeks. The Rockets are on here. This would be a fascinating deal. Does it happen? Probably not, but it's fun to dream. It's fun to have a team that is at this stage of their, I don't even call it a rebuild now. Like they're just a really good basketball team. Like now It's just a question. Are they a title contender that should be looking at making finishing moves like this? Because this would for sure be more of a finishing move because the central figure in this trade is getting on in years, but he's still very effective and fills a definitive need for the Rockets, which is the ability to shoot outside of the three-point arc at an elite, elite level.
He's the guy that many other teams before have looked at as, hey, maybe this guy is the missing piece and so winning a championship.
Yeah.
Right.
And he was right in one of those stops twice. Granted, they'd already won a championship, and everybody hated him for going there.
Could this guy be the missing piece in continuing a freakish run of championship runs?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So the trade, if you can read the tea leaves here, the trade would involve Kevin Durant coming to the Houston Rockets. Here's the deal. This is ESPN.com, the author of the article to give proper attribution. Oh, it just says NBA insiders. Okay. So the trade goes like this. The Rockets would get Kevin Durant and then center Bol Bol, Manute Ball's kid, guard Monty Morris, guard Damian Lee. Obviously, Durant is the central figure. The rest of this stuff just is in there to make salaries work out. This is what the Rockets would have to ship out. Dylan Brooks, Cam Whitmore, Jayshon Tate, Jeff Green, Jock Landale, and they would be giving Phoenix's two first-round picks in 2025 and 2027 back to the Suns.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, yeah. You confused me there for a second. Right. So Phoenix gets those picks back.
Yeah.
So you're trading two first-round picks, which, you know, the rule in Houston is whenever you trade away a first-round pick, you say, well, yeah, who cares?
Right.
They're always like a 29 or 30. Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who hurts there? It does not... Even though Cam Whitmore, I know, look, Cam Whitmore has shown up more and more. He's got opportunities now. But I'm not going to cry a million tears for that. Dylan Brooks is the one, I guess, that I just... He's been such a core part of changing the core around and the attitude, plus his actual play. Dylan Brooks is the one that hurts. But then the basketball fan in me, when I hear the name Kevin Durant, my eyes get all googly. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you got to get Kevin Durant. Whenever you got a chance to get Kevin Durant,
well,
who the hell cares about anything else?
This is this would be a trade that if they were the 9 seed right now in the Western Conference,
yeah,
I would say don't do this. But
yeah,
we've got a half a season worth of evidence here. And this half a season worth of evidence where they've had to deal with some injuries. You know, like there have been guys, who, you know, like Amen Thompson missed some games suspended. You know, Tari Eason is a big part of this team. He's been banged up quite a bit. I love this trade. I absolutely love this trade because, in essence, I don't know that Cam Whitmore is part of the future of this. I think Cam Whitmore might end up being a 20-point-a-game scorer somewhere. It's not going to be on the Houston Rockets. And the fact that he's got some Deontay Johnson in him is I could see – I said this Seth, the day that we played that audio of him agitating about his playing time is that there's a little Deontay Johnson and Cam Whitmore. I think whatever big trade they end up making, he'll be part of it just because he's expendable and his attitude makes him even more expendable. You've got young guy, the first round picks. I know you were joking about that just now, like, hey, he's first round pick. To the Rockets, they really don't mean anything. They don't need any more young guys, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, for different reasons now, though, too. Used to be that, not because, to be clear, these are Phoenix's picks. So
yes.
It does, like, they're going to be better picks than whatever the Rockets' record puts them at. But, right, for different reasons, I don't want to say, you know, like, act like you don't care about first-round picks, but... It's a much different. You're not in a building environment right now as much as you have been in the past.
The one that you go, okay, this hurts. Like, if you were just forget that it's a trade, let's just pretend you were to lose this guy for any period of time. Like, Dylan Brooks brings something to this team. Brooks is an elite defender. He's not a great shooter, but he can knock shots down. He absolutely brings a swagger and a snarl to this team that. It matters a whole lot more when you're in uniform than sitting in street clothes, you know, like that kind. Jayshon Tate, Jeff Green, Jock Landale, like that's just chum to me. You know what I mean? Like this is a Kevin Durant for Dylan Brooks, Cam Whitmore, and those two first round picks. And I would do that trade in a heartbeat, man. Can you imagine a starting lineup of Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green in your backcourt, and your front court is Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant, and Alperen Şengün?
Yeah, the only thing I wonder about...
Talk me out of it, Seth.
My knee-jerk reaction and thought is this, that it is still a young team when you talk about a lot of the critical and crucial guys on the team. They're still very young. And Dylan Brooks has been part of a veteran core that's brought a very blue-collar mentality or it helped infuse a blue-collar mentality into him. So I guess I just wonder, it's not like Kevin Durant, you know, like Kevin Durant plays defense and everything. I'm not acting like he's, you know, but he's also the kind of guy who's in Golden State was the exact opposite of Draymond Green. And it felt like he didn't quite fit the culture there, all of that. I guess I just worry a little bit about tinkering with the chemistry.
Yeah.
I know what that sounds like. You're like, okay, you're worried about chemistry when you're also talking about bringing in Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Only because it is still a very young team. Mm-hmm. And that I guess that's what, if it doesn't work out, like if it doesn't, if this isn't the move that puts them over the top or gets them a championship this year or what have you, like what does that do for the development over those guys over the next several years or long term? And that's the only, and I'm only bringing it up because that's my knee-jerk thought to it.
Sure.
I don't think it doesn't outweigh the fact that you're bringing Kevin Durant onto the team.
Yeah, I think if that were your major concern and my goal was to like soothe your concerns, I would say that's a more valid concern if Mike D'Antoni's the head coach.
And you're the
dog that you are trying to inject into this team is having to come from the player constituency. Ime Udoka is your head coach. I never worry about the intensity, the dog, whatever it is you want to call it, of this team. As long as that guy's the head coach, then I think you can afford to lose Dylan Brooks in a deal that brings in a future Hall of Famer who fills a need. Like I don't want anything to do with Jimmy Butler, but Kevin Durant. Like, this team has offensive issues, man, and he fills that for you, you know? And he's not a guy who's got to be ball dominant either, man. Like, he can be the end point on all this stuff, just posting up at the three-point line.
And it is, and also, too, if you look at it, and all right, okay, do they lose a little defensively? Sure, perhaps. But it's that right now defense is not the issue at all. They've got room to maneuver a little bit to take some hits defensively.
Mm-hmm.
The offense is the thing that when you look at it and you think about, okay, this team in a 7-game series, can they get away with not being a good shooting basketball team? Durant solves a lot of those issues.
For sure.
I feel like it's a slam dunk.
Yeah. If it's available, this is a dream article here, but if I would do this. I mean, you're chasing teams right now.
Who says no on this? Which team says no on this?
I think right now it would be Phoenix because I think they probably still feel like there's enough runway left in the season for
them. 500.
Like they're kind of in that 9-10 range right now. But if you get to the trade deadline, and you know, and we know in the NBA, it does, it's not just the team making the decision. Like if Kevin Durant wants to agitate enough, and he knows that he's got a landing spot in Houston, he can agitate for the trade.
Yeah, we got to make him unhappy. Unhappier. Yes. Let's float some rumors irresponsibly.
Let's smash up his car and paint on it as if the Suns did that to his car, like Jefferson in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yes, I think that's the most ethical route to take.
Yes, I agree. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Would you do that deal? Text in 713-572-4610. J.J. Watt was on Pat McAfee yesterday. I love hearing a Hall of Famer that was a Texans defensive player talk about this Texans defense. J.J. Watt breaks down the Chiefs and the Texans and provide some commentary on what's going on up in Dallas, too. I love that. Yeah, we'll do that coming up next.